Bernard Daly walked the earth for just a bit more than six decades, but a century and more after he died, he's still doing good works for the students of Lake County. Lake County, Oregon, I should specify. Daly arrived in Lakeview just as it was coming together, lived the rest of his life there, and when he died, left enough money to start a fund to send high school students of the county to college. The story of the man and the fund is told by Sam Stern in his book, Bernard Daly's Promise, The Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship. Publication of the book is set for June of this year, but we have Sam Stern now. He's a professor at Oregon State University, Dean Emeritus of the College of Education. He spent a career focusing on the relationships between learning and working. Sam Stern, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Sam, you there? Yep. Caught a little bit of you there for a second.
Yes, I am here, Jeffrey, and happy to be with you.
Good to have you. Apparently, as you tell us in the book, you knew about the Daly Scholarship from your early days at OSU. It took a while to commit it to paper, though, huh?
That is right. So, when I joined the faculty at OSU in the early 1980s, I had a friend and colleague who was from Lake County, and he told me the story, and it stuck with me.
So in the process of fleshing out the story for the book, I get the sense that you interviewed about half the population of Lake County.
You know, some days it seems like that. Happily, I've gotten to know a lot of people from Lake County, and I did interview more than 100, as well as working with a graduate student on a web-based survey. So I've really enjoyed getting to know the people. They are scattered around the country. Those who got the scholarship, 75%, have gone on to exciting careers all over the country and actually all over the world.
And is this what the survey was about, was to find out what they'd done with the scholarship?
That's right. So the book that you mentioned is about the remarkable life of Bernard Daly and the impact of his scholarship. And the impact has been extraordinary.
All right. So more than 75% have gone on to exciting careers. So obviously a lot of use. How many people have used it thus far?
Well, it's 75% who've left Lake County. Mm-hmm. They all have gone on to exciting careers and lives. But given that many of them are prepared to be scientists and lawyers and artists, their work has taken them all over the country. But there have been somewhat more than 2,000. So Daly's will specified that not less than 15 would receive the scholarship each year. Now, Lake County is a sparsely populated county, so at the time that Daly started this, the first scholarships were awarded in 1922, there were very few graduates. Even today, there are about 50 graduates from Lakeview High School and some additional graduates from Paisley and North Lake. Those are the only high schools in Lake County which is the size, roughly, of New Jersey.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, three high schools for an area the size of New Jersey. So a sparsely populated area, obviously, but 2,000, that's impressive over the course of the century since the scholarship was first bestowed.
Yes, it is, and the impact has been much greater because that example led to other scholarships being created for Lake County and in that area. One of the most recent ones, the Owsley Scholarship, was created with about a $10 million endowment, providing scholarships not only in Lake County, but also in Klamath County. And Jim Owsley himself was a Daly Fund recipient in the 1930s. So that example has led to generosity, not just by the scholarship recipients, but by people in the communities that have been touched by the scholarship.
So, Sam, the rarity of the scholarship aside, I mean, obviously it was not a thing that happened a lot when it started. How rare was college itself for most people
right
at that time?
In the 1920s, less than 2% of Americans went to college, and less than 20% finished high school. When that scholarship was started, we were just approaching what's been thought of the second great educational transformation. The first was the advent of common schools, public schooling K through 8 in the mid-1800s. The second one, which took quite some time, was public high schools. And really in the 20s and 30s, those began to be more common. The third transformation is higher ed, which was spurred on by the GI Bill in the 40s. And here we are today where going to college is a common expectation. When Daley created that scholarship, it was far from an expectation. Almost no one went to college.
So, Sam, what does the scholarship pay for over how long a duration, and are there some benchmarks students have to keep up, like grades?
Yes, there's some unique characteristics about the scholarship that were set into place by Bernard Daley himself. And these characteristics have made that scholarship so successful. I think there's much that can be learned from them. So, first of all, it is a scholarship for the full 4 years. And you can only keep it if you maintain a full load and a minimum grade point average. Then there is some competition to get the scholarship. Though most of the students receive it, there is a competition that's based on grade point and SATs. So yes, there are requirements that keep that scholarship successful, and they've led to quite a strong educational culture in that community as students start thinking about it as early as elementary school.
Bernard Daley's promise on the Jefferson Exchange. Back with Sam Stern in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. A program note to give to our morning listeners who are waiting to hear the takeaway after this program. It will not be heard this morning. President Joe Biden will speak about Russia and Ukraine and all that is going down in that part of the world. So the takeaway at 10 a.m. not heard today because there'll be special coverage of President Biden's remarks. You can either keep it tuned on the News and Information Service or tuned to ijpr.org or to the smartphone app. Now back to our conversation here on the Exchange. Bernard Daley escaped the Irish famine, moved to Alabama with his family, ended up in Lakeview, Oregon, where upon his death, he announced a scholarship program or left it in his will and has been sending Lake County students to college for 100 years now. Sam Stern, professor emeritus at Oregon State University, writes up the story in Bernard Daley's Promise, the Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship, to be published in June. You can join us now on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So let's dive in, Sam, into Bernard Daley. It sounds like he died with some people thinking he didn't have much money.
You know, he was a frugal person by all reports. He lived mostly in a rooming house or a room in a hotel. And it has been said that he seemed to survive on a nickel bowl of soup. But people knew he was wealthy. He was the most, the largest landowner in Lake County. He was a rancher. He started the first bank, very entrepreneurial. But he lived a very modest life. People wondered how much wealth he had, and I'm sure they wondered what he would do with it. He never married. He had no direct heirs. It was a surprise, a shock. It was front page news, not only in Lakeview, but in the Oregonian, in Portland. It's a large sum of money in those days.
And what was it that he left to start the scholarship fund?
So his estate was about $1 million in 1920 money. That would be the equivalent of many tens of millions of dollars, perhaps 100 in today's dollars. He had some bequests that were smaller. He left, I believe, $1,000 to each of his nephews and his nieces. And he left an annuity for a dozen years to the local hospital to care for those who did not have funds. And he established a couple $1,000 a year annuity for his very dear friend with whom he had a long, loving relationship, Pearl Hall. But the bulk, you know, 90% plus of his estate went to establish the scholarship.
I have many questions about Pearl Hall that I'll save for later because I want to come back to the beginning of Daly's life. He certainly started with little money. He was born in Ireland 11 years after the worst of the famine in 1858. How was it his family came to be in Alabama and during the Civil War at that?
That's quite a story, and took me a little while to track down. So he did emigrate from Ireland along with his family, just a boy of about five, and he emigrated to, of all places, Selma, Alabama, in 1863. And I, like others, I'm sure, was wondering how in the world did he come to be in the heart of the South during the Civil War? So the answer is found by historians who have explored this time when so many Irish went to New York and to Boston that they established their own laws. They were called state passenger laws to keep the poor Irish out. And these were our country's first immigration laws. They actually predate federal immigration laws. And so in order for poor Irish to get to America and escape poverty, they would get on the blockade-running ships. And Mobile, Alabama, was the last port to be closed or blockaded. And Selma, which was not far from, is not far from Mobile, Alabama, was the home of large munitions plant for the Confederacy. So there's lots of work. So ships would leave the South with cotton to be sold in England for the Confederacy to have resources and funds, and they'd come back with some passengers and also with uniforms and materials. So that's how Daly and his family came to be in the South during the Civil War.
All right, so Selma, Alabama, a pretty good-sized Irish family. What is known about Bernard Daly's early schooling and his interest in continuing to get an education?
You know, it's pretty spotty, and we have Pearl Hall to thank for that, because Pearl Hall knew Daly for much of his adult life in Lakeview, and she herself, in the 1940s, she lived much longer than Daly did. She thought that she might write a book. Now, she never did, but her notes for that book are contained in the archives of the University of Oregon in what are called the Pearl Hall Papers, and they've been a tremendous resource to me in writing this book. Those papers, the Pearl Hall Papers, include the roughly 45 letters written between them when they were apart, and so through that, I can hear Bernard Daly's voice and also Pearl's. And so she wrote a bit about his reminiscing about his boyhood. And we know that education was important to him at an early age. And we know a bit about his character from his recollections as she recorded them in her notes.
Sam Stern is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the author of the forthcoming book, Bernard Daly's Promise, The Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship. So he did go to medical school, but not really in the way that we think of medical school now. How different was his medical education from what is required now?
You know, it's quite a bit different from what's required now, but it's even more different from what preceded that. So at the time that Bernard Daly became a doctor, pretty much anyone who called themselves a doctor was a doctor. And so he went to medical school at a time when almost nobody did. So he went to most doctors before Daly or during the time, early time of Daly, didn't go to college. They apprenticed with someone who called themselves a doctor. And yes, he went. It was just less than a year, but it was the University of Louisville medical program. That's after he had finished his undergraduate or college degree at Ohio Normal, which is now Ohio Northern University. And so he knew about germ theory. He knew about antiseptics and anesthesia. He had knowledge that most doctors at the time did not.
So the Irish concentration in Lake County, I mean, I noticed this when I first moved to Oregon 36 years ago, the O'Learys and more coming out of the woodwork. Was there something that made it a bit of an Irish nexus, and is that what drew Bernard Daly to the region?
So, yes, there is something that has created the very large and wonderful Irish population in Lake County, but that's not at all what drew Bernard Daly to Lake County. Let me start with Bernard Daly's journey to Lake County, and I'll circle back to the question of the Irish community. So Bernard Daly finished his medical degree at the University of Louisville in 1887, and like so many people at the time, he headed west using the relatively new railway. And he found his way first to California, where he was one of the first to get a medical license. This is the very beginning of professional licensure. So he got a medical license in California, and then from Northern California, exactly the listening area that your radio station has, he went across the state line and took the stage to this new town of Lakeview, where they didn't have a doctor. So at the time, the population of Lakeview was about 300 people. And he became the town doctor, and was on the town council when they first started.
We are talking to Sam Stern, Professor Emeritus and Dean Emeritus at Oregon State University, about his book about Bernard Daly, the man who died with more money than people thought he had back in 1920 and set up a scholarship fund to send Lake County students to college. The story is told in Sam's book, Bernard Daly's Promise, the Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship. And it's a conversation you can join on the Jefferson Exchange with your phone calls at 800-838-3760 and your emails at jx@jeffnet.org. Paul on Sterling Creek writes, I'm a third-generation Southern Oregonian and have never heard the story about Mr. Daly. What an inspiration. I'm looking forward to reading the book. I don't suspect Paul is alone in that. But Bernard Daly wasn't just the town doctor. He also won political office, and that was pretty soon after his arrival, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So really a remarkable man at an interesting time in history. So he showed up in Lakeview in 1887 and immediately became part of the town council and immediately went on to the school board. You can tell he had a strong interest in education because he served on the school board continuously for 30 years, virtually all of his life after arriving in Lakeview.
Wow.
Now, he was elected to the Oregon House of Representatives, to the legislature, in 1892, and he served his term, and then he went on and he served a term as senator. So he was a senator in the Oregon Senate. He was appointed by the governor to the Board of Regents of Oregon Agricultural College, today's Oregon State University, my university. So he was involved in all sorts of things that supported the state and the community.
One little political sidelight here, which actually bears an echo in our times of things like legislative walkouts and stuff, but Daly got elected to the Senate at a very strange time, and it was the peak of the fights over gold and silver-backed currency. How did that affect the legislator meeting in his first term?
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and it is an echo, and it's a reminder that the type of divisiveness that we see today has actually been around for a long time. And when he was elected to the Senate, the wedge issue of the day was the gold standard. So at the time, the U.S. and countries around the world based their monetary policy on a fixed commodity, gold. However, that limited the amount of money that could be available for borrowing or the amount of money that was in play. And there was a very severe depression, and in particular, it had a very bad effect on ranchers and farmers who relied on having money available to them for loans as they went into each year. So Daley supported a bimetallic approach, which would expand the amount of money available by using silver in addition to gold. This was a minority position at the time. All of the established parts of society felt the gold standard was the only way to go. The most radical party was the Greenback Party, which believed that you should not base it on either gold or silver, but you should just be able to establish the amount of money that was available. Now, that was thought to be incredibly radical, of course.
And what do you know, it's mainstream now, yeah.
Today, that's what happens. And so this was such a wedge issue that in the House, so, you know, there's both the Senate and the House, you know, they refused to organize on the basis of this issue. So no votes went forward. So it was essentially the do-nothing year. There was no action for the entire year, and one of the senators was not appointed. So in those days, one senator was popularly elected, and one senator was appointed by the body itself. Legislative body.
U.S. senators, you mean?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, wow. So, it definitely slowed things down, both in Salem and, for that matter, in Washington. Bernard Daley was a candidate for Congress in 1900, ended his campaign early to return to Lakeview. What was going on?
Yeah, you know, he had a statewide presence.
And that is the sound of a phone hanging up. Sorry, it happens more than we really want it to here on the Jefferson Exchange. Of late, we're going to get that reconnection reestablished. We're talking about talking with Sam Stern about his book, Bernard Daley's Promise, The Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship. Bernard Daley was the Irish immigrant who had arrived in Lakeview via Selma, Alabama, and became the town doctor, and also became a member of the town council and a school board member and a member of the Oregon House, and later was elected to the Oregon Senate. We're just now getting up to the point where Bernard Daley was elected to or was running for Congress in 1900, did not make it. You'll hear why when we get Sam back on the line. But Bernard Daley lived frugally, lived in a rooming house, ran a bank out of his rooming house, and had his medical practice going as well. Never married, had no kids, and when he died, had $1 million in his estate, which was a lot of money at the time. And so he now has, when he got to the end of his life, he established this scholarship fund in his will that said Lake County students should get to go to college. We are trying to reestablish that connection now. Do we have him? Okay. Sam, you're back.
Well, thank you. Sorry I missed you for a bit.
We covered just a bit on this end. Kind of recap the story. So running for Congress, 1900, and ended his campaign early.
Yes, he did. There was a terrible fire in Lakeview in 1900, and his heart was very much with the rebuilding of that community. So he returned to Lakeview and did not campaign further.
Wow. So let's now turn to Pearl Hall as we get close to the break and into our last segment. It sounds like she kept better notes than he did, and the love of his life, but he never married. Do you know what was up there?
It's timely that you mention Pearl Hall in relation to the run for Congress and the time that he stopped campaigning. Not only was there a fire in Lakeview, but that is exactly when he met Pearl Hall. So Vinton Hall, Pearl Hall's brother, was Bernard Daley's partner in many ventures. And so I'm sure it was through Vinton Hall that he met Pearl. And we see evidence of that in the letters that have been written, one of which is a letter from Bernard Daley to Vinton Hall, in which there's mention of his sister Pearl. You know, the letters between them are such that it's clear that they had a very loving relationship. We can only speculate why they did not marry, and one reason may very well be that Pearl Hall herself was an educator. She was a teacher and a principal, and that's in the very school district where Daley was the chair of the school board. So perhaps that had something to do with it. It seems that they were inseparable, except for summers when she would go to be with her family or to travel, and they wrote letters. sometimes as often as every day.
Is it likely that that she didn't marry him because she would have had to quit her job as an educator?
I think that's, you know, one of the things that we might speculate. And so I think that that whole relationship and her commitment to her work, which is really clear through her career, she went on to become the county superintendent, the Lake County School Superintendent.
Wow, that's a pretty amazing for that time and for that for America before 1950. We're talking to Sam Stern about Bernard Daly's Promise, the enduring legacy of a place-based scholarship, about Bernard Daly's scholarship sending Lake County students to college. We'll come back and finish the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. I'm glad you're listening. We're talking about Bernard Daly, who has not walked the earth for 102 years now. For the last 100, a scholarship he set up in his will has been sending students from Lake County, Oregon to college, more than 2,000 of them now. His original will said not less than 15. Well, he's exceeded that by many times. It is all told in a forthcoming book from Oregon State University Press, written by an Oregon State University professor and dean emeritus, Sam Stern. The book is called Bernard Daly's Promise, The Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship. You can join us in the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We've been talking about Pearl Hall, the love of Bernard Daly's life. Clear from their correspondence, she kept voluminous records, which help us understand him and his motivations somewhat. Chris in Medford emailed in, Sam, to ask, how influential do you think Pearl Hall was in Dr. Daly establishing that Lake County scholarship?
I do think that Pearl was very influential. I believe that Bernard Daly always had the idea of encouraging others in education. But I expect that Pearl did more than reinforce that, but also helped him think about how that might occur. I can only imagine that anything important they would have talked about together.
Oh, Chris in Medford just sent an addendum to his earlier email, their earlier email, to say that Pearl Hall is buried in Eastwood Cemetery in Medford.
Yes, she is, and I'm so glad that Chris... reminded both of us of that. This really is Southern Oregon history, and there's a lot in that context.
So let's talk about Daly's life just a bit more. I mean, because of all the things we've talked about, he did. There were some that he also did that we haven't even talked about yet. He also studied for the bar.
You know, he did an awful lot. You know, he was a doctor, he was a lawyer, he was a judge, he was a banker, and he was a rancher. So, you know, you have to stop to talk about each one of those. But as he approached 50, he studied for the bar and received his law license. At the time, he was already appointed or elected county judge. A county judge in those days was a very, very important position. For Lake County, the county judge was basically like being governor. Salem, our capital, is pretty far away, and they left quite a bit to the individual counties, so many things. So, yes, he was a lawyer and a judge.
Wow. So he certainly diversified his income. Is there any indication which of the sources of his income made the most of that million-dollar fortune he died with?
I suspect that there was quite a bit that was associated with ranching. So, you know, ranching in Lake County, these are big ranches, and there was quite a growing demand for beef from the San Francisco area. So he was shipping sheep and cattle all over the place from the ranch in which he had a financial interest. Now, that together with his banking, he began banking in the time period when banks as we know them did not exist at all. One can easily imagine that the doctor in town and had some money might begin loaning money to others. And pretty soon he's running a small bank out of his doctor's office. And before you know it, he's establishing an actual bank and segregating funds between his personal funds and the bank funds. And so he began and created a full bank.
The sequence of events prior to his death leads me to believe that he knew he was seriously ill because he did make out the will not very long before he died.
Not very long. Not very long. He finalized it just weeks before. So yes, I think you are right. This is something he thought about. The will was very well crafted. And as I tell the story in the book, it was challenged. So it had a legal challenge by the distant heirs, which included people from many different countries. So because they knew that there was a sizable amount of money, it went to federal court. Now, his will was airtight, and so the challenge was not successful, but it was a nicely, carefully constructed will.
What was the reaction in Lakeview to A, his death, B, the knowledge that he had $1 million, and C, his bequest with the scholarship?
From all reports, just incredible. So front page news for weeks and weeks and weeks. The school district and the county offices immediately started getting phone calls. You know, how do we get our kids to get the scholarship just shortly after he passed away? But because of the legal challenge to the will, the first scholarship was not awarded until 1922. And so here we are. 2022, the 100-year anniversary of that first awarding of the scholarship.
Yeah, it's quite the occasion there. There's a vignette in the book that I really enjoy. It's just a quiet conversation, apparently, that Bernard Daly had with Connie Robertson about a year before his death. Tell the story of the circumstances of their meeting and that conversation.
Right. That story is, I think, special, and it's really behind the title of the book. So, shortly before he passed away, he had gone to the telegraph office. And in those days, the telegraph office, just a small place, and the family that ran it, their daughter, who was a high school student, a high school junior at the time, she would work the evening or night shift. And Daly would come in, but he would wait to send the telegram until the night rates went into effect at 11 o'clock. So he could save a nickel. This was his nature. This was a very frugal man. So while he waited, he would talk to Connie, who, because she stayed late, would have to sleep on a cot and then go to school the next morning. And Daly asked her what she wanted to do, and she said she'd love to go to college and maybe become a doctor, but there's no way she could go. Her family didn't have any money. It was out of reach. And Daly said to her, "There'll be a way. You'll go." And so, indeed, within a year later, he passed away, and Connie Robertson was in the very first class of 1922 that got the scholarship. She went to the University of Oregon. She went to medical school. She became a doctor. She practiced in New York City, in San Diego, and returned to Lake County, where she practiced in Lakeview. Not only did that happen for Connie, but it happened for her sister Jocelyn, who also got the scholarship. Also went to med school, also became a doctor. So two women at a time when very few women went to college, went to medical school, or became doctors, but they did.
Which might have thrilled Bernard Daly, and you know, I think he could see it coming with his conversation with Connie Robertson, but he was actually quite liberal, it sounds like, in his views of women's rights.
Well, he was. Now, he supported women's suffrage, supported women's voting, and so there is a record of a speech he gave in Lakeview, and in which he argued in favor of Oregon voting for women's rights, as they did. Took three times, but they did. So, yes, he was outspoken for causes that he believed in, very much cared about his county and his country. He led the effort to purchase Liberty Bonds to support the investment and necessary investment for World War I. So definitely a person who engaged in the world, yes.
Let us take a phone call in here. We have Carter in Wolf Creek on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sam Stern, the author of Bernard Daly's Promise.
Yes, good morning. I've been listening since you started, and what name keeps popping up in my mind is Henry George, the author of Progress and Poverty. And the question is, did Bernard know Henry?
You know, I don't know that he did. I don't. But the work and legacy of Bernard Daly has done much to change the circumstances of people. So there is a researcher from Harvard. His name is Raj Chetty, and he did wonderful analysis using census and tax records to show how the circumstances of where you came from can change what happens to you. And it turns out that in America, Lake County is in the 90th percentile, better than 90% of all American communities, in taking people in the bottom 20% of household income and moving to the top 20%. So in other words, that happens more frequently for people in Lake County than 90% of America. That's extraordinary.
When you mentioned the Raj Chetty stuff in the book, I went right there to opportunityatlas.org.
That's right.
Make sure I link to that. It is a fascinating map.
The
more you zoom in, the more you can get finer detail on the place you're from. So I was looking at my hometown in Connecticut, for example, to see upward mobility. So talk about the fact that the fund still exists, and here we are talking to it 100 years after it first gave out some money. I mean, how was and is the fund money invested?
So the fund has benefited incredibly from very careful and excellent management by trustees, the secretary treasurers, and the community at large. So it's not so much that there were just incredibly shrewd and incredible choices for the investments, but that the community and the trustees have been good stewards of both the money and the spirit of the campaign. So that initial endowment by Bernard Daly has been greatly increased by others who've added to it. So over years, many of the recipients have added money to the original fund. So it's grown. And as I've mentioned, other scholarships have been established. So today, Lake County has more endowed funds for higher education than any other county in America.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. I want to mention another set of names here. The Ogle family figures prominently in the story of the use of the scholarship, and some of the names will be familiar to people in our region.
Yes, so Jim and Dorothy Ogle are both recipients, and I'm very fortunate to have gotten to know them, especially through their daughter, Sue Densmore Ogle. And so I met Sue at an event here at Oregon State University. Sue and both of her sisters, all three of them are Daly Fund recipients. All three of them are Oregon State University graduates. And when I told Sue about my interest in learning and studying the fund, she invited me to her parents, Jim and Dorothy's ranch, for their annual Labor Day breakfast. And that was the beginning of many trips to the Lakeview area. Sadly, Jim and Dorothy have passed away, but I'm so grateful to have gotten to know them and their family, one of many wonderful families in the Lake County area that have been touched by the Daly Scholarship.
You bring in the epilogue in the book, The American Dream, and remind us that it's not about simply material success, at least it wasn't to the person who coined the term, and so this is relevant to the book, it seems.
Very relevant. So the phrase, the American Dream, which we hear quite a bit, was coined by James Truslow Adams, and interesting guy himself. And if you look back at his original construction of that phrase, it really wasn't about material success for a person. It was about anyone being able to find their way to the place where they could best express who they are. And it wasn't just about an individual person, but about them making that possible for others. So in that sense, I believe that Bernard Daly is the epitome of the American dream. And what he's done has made Lake County somewhat of an American dream machine, because many people grow up in that community. They receive the scholarship. And as I said, about 75% of those who receive the scholarship go elsewhere. And so new people come. So in that sense, you could think of Lake County as a bit of a American dream machine.
I wonder, and I'm asking this only because we've had the COVID-19 pandemic, if there's any evidence that people might be moving to Lake County to do the work from home thing because they don't have to have a place-based situation.
It's a beautiful place. People should consider that. But Lake County is pretty remote. And so it's not a place that perhaps a lot of people are moving to, but in these days when remote work is more possible, I expect you'll see more people doing that.
All righty. The book is scheduled for publication in June. Bernard Daly's Promise, The Enduring Legacy of a Place-Based Scholarship by Sam Stern, Professor Emeritus, Dean Emeritus at Oregon State University. Sam, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jeffrey. Happy to be on the program. And for your listeners, some may be interested in going out to Lakeview June 24th, 25th, 26th, when they celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the Daly Scholarship.